Welcome to the Asbury First United Methodist Church weekly sermon. We hope you enjoy this message by Mike Mullen. For more information about this podcast or for other ways to connect, please visit asburyfirst.org.
Parables. Am I right? I mean, who doesn't love a good parable? If the gospel writers got anything right, then we know that Jesus loves a good parable. But the thing about parables is that they are, well, parabolic. That is, they are not straight and homogeneous. And what a wonderful illustration that is of how Jesus prefers a queer approach to theology. Allied affirmations aside, this nuanced, cryptic, and sideways means of communication is challenging when we need to figure out what the heck Jesus is talking about. For one thing, it's not always clear if Jesus is speaking in parables. If you look up the number of parables that Jesus gives, you will find numbers ranging from 30 to 60. And once you have decided something is a parable, you then get to argue, prayerfully discern what the message hidden inside of the story is all about. And in my position, we call this need to interpret the texts job security. Now, our passage for today is unique. First, in verse 3, we are told that what is forthcoming is a parable. Interestingly, this is the first use of the term parable in the Gospel of Matthew. And second, verses 18 through 23 interpret the parable for us. Which makes me think, if this passage has already been presented and explicated, then I motion that we adjourn this sermon for the day. Do I have a second? Excellent. Sermon adjourned. You know, on second thoughts, most of us already do have this time carved out, but so we don't need to amend Robert's rules to re-engage, perhaps we can simply move on by considering an alternative sermon for the day. And to help us with that, may I propose to you a parable that parallels our passage for today. Hear, O Asbury First, this parallel parable. A couple escapes their country, seeking asylum in a land of freedom and opportunity. But their path is hard, and the coyotes are waiting, ready to devour them. A teenager leaves their family behind to embark on a multi-year intercontinental trek through the jungle. Their way is rocky and full of perils. The joy and hope of something better on the horizon quickly fade to the disasters, destitution, and death on their journey. A mother and child abandon their home, fleeing a place where slavery is still legal, in the hopes of finding freedom on distant shores, but the thorns in their sides persist as they are denied entry and forced to return to a land and life of slavery and terror. A family stays where they are. They have support systems and structures to help them thrive right where they are. And they do. Let all who are able comprehend these words. This is the parable of the migrant, the immigrant, the asylum seeker, the refugee. This is the parable that 18 of our youth and chaperones experienced and witnessed over and over again on our southern border just over a week ago. This is a parable that may be understood on a surface level, but continues to convict and call to action the longer we are willing to sit with it. You see, one of the points of a parable that is often overlooked is that it is convicting to the intended audience. In part, Jesus speaks in parables so that he can deliver a harsh message in a more palatable way. And those that aren't ready to hear it don't. In some ways, that's what the parable of the sower is about, how different people can hear the same message and they can respond in drastically different ways. Some will simply ignore the parable. Some will be excited and passionate for a short time. Others will struggle on, eventually giving in to the hoi polloi and zeitgeist of comfort and ease. And still others will hear their calling and go out into the world to make a difference and bear more fruit. This is one basic way to understand and interpret the parable of the sower. The parallel parable offered above is a bit different, but kind of the same. In the gospel parable, the seeds had no control over where they were planted. And it's worth noting that for the sake of time and tenor, we will ignore the implications of a malevolent or impotent sower in this text. That will remain as fodder for a future sermon. Instead, we will remain focused on the seeds that had no control over where they were strewn about. In the same way, representatives in our new parable had no control over where their lives began. In both cases, the subjects were simply grasping for life. The contrast then comes in the final illustration. It is easy for us to read the gospel account and pat ourselves on the back for being the bearers of good fruit. After all, we are the ones that are here in church. We even stuck around to listen after the pastor began a second sermon. I appreciate you. But in this second parable, the final illustration ensures that we don't miss the communal conviction. Most of us relate much more fully to the last example than to the previous three. Most of us were born into a world with support systems and structures that have allowed us to live without fear for our lives. And while we often go about our daily routines without a second thought about this privilege, this parable highlights our stark reality and leaves us feeling uncomfortable. For most of us, our inaction is showcased in such a way that we become frozen in place. Too nervous to look around and potentially make eye contact with those among us who might recognize and actualize those previous examples in their own lives. We may recognize this feeling from when we are watching a movie or a TV show or listening to a sermon with our family, and much to our surprise, something overtly sexual suddenly becomes the focus of the scene. Suddenly, no one moves for fear of making eye contact or drawing undue attention to themselves. But just like we should probably be much more comfortable talking about sex and sexuality with our families, we should also be much more comfortable talking about our inequities in our communities. And to help us along with the latter, let's take a moment to unpack our parallel parable for this morning. Many of our young people recently spent a week on our southern border learning about the challenges depicted there. And so we will use their experiences and the stories they encountered to help us better understand this parable. A couple escapes their country seeking asylum in a land of freedom and opportunity, but their path is hard and the coyotes are waiting, ready to devour them. This speaks to the reality of so many individuals and families who are fleeing their countries. Oftentimes, there is not a safe path from, through, or to where they are going. This means they must rely on the help, guidance, and kindness of strangers. Individuals that help grant passage for travelers are referred to as coyotes. And while some are reliable, many extort the travelers in their time of need. They recognize the desperation and they promise safe passage in exchange for money or favors, only to leave the travelers with nothing. Others are kidnapped and held for ransom, some are raped, some are sold into slavery, and those that might be a threat are killed. You never know what might be waiting for you on the road. The path is hard, and the coyotes are waiting. A teenager leaves their family behind to embark on a multi-year intercontinental trek through the jungle. Their way is rocky and full of perils. The joy and hope of something better on the horizon quickly fade to the disasters, destitution, and death on their journey. This story is much more personal. We had dinner with a young person who left home at 15 and traveled for years before making it into the United States and requesting asylum not once, but twice. As a teenager, they shared what it was like to be on the road, There were fellow travelers that helped each other out, but it was still very much every person for themselves. When someone could no longer walk, they were left behind. When a flood washed away a whole group of people, no one went looking for them. When they were abandoned or abused by coyotes, no one came to their aid. I asked this young person if, knowing what they knew now, they would make the journey again. Without hesitation, they said, no. They left their home with the hopes and dreams of freedom and new life. And while they managed to survive the hell along the way, they now understand the cost. Sometimes the devil you know is better than the devil you don't. And while this person is now on track to seek asylum in the United States, there is still a high chance that they will be deported back to their home country, and all of these travails will have been for naught. What began as a journey of hope will forever be remembered as a trek of terror and trauma. A mother and child abandon their home, fleeing a place where slavery is still legal in the hopes of finding freedom on distant shores. But the thorns in their sides persist as they are denied entry and forced to return to a land of slavery and terror. Most of us may assume that those crossing the southern border are from Mexico or some similar Central American country. In fact, many of the asylum seekers we met came from Mauritania, a country in northwest Africa, which, as our parable suggests, is one of many countries that does not have any laws against slavery. And while thousands of immigrants cross into the United States every day and request asylum, only about 10% of these individuals will be granted asylum. The rest will be deported in order to be granted asylum. You need to prove to a court that your life was at risk, and you will likely be tortured or killed if you return to your country. And while this is undoubtedly true for way more than 10% of the individuals, the onus of proof is on the asylum seeker. Often, all these individuals have to share is their word, their story, and generally, their word is not enough. Our implicit understanding of innocent until proven guilty seems to benefit the abusers in these cases, rather than the victims. This is a harsh reality that the marginalized among us may already empathize with and recognize as truth. Even after a family has done all in its power to escape their abusers, they may be separated, detained, and ultimately deported with no hope of reconnecting. The thorns they sought to escape continue to follow them and suck all of the remaining life out of them. A family stays where they are. They have support systems and structures to help them thrive right where they are, and they do. As we have stated, this is most of us. Not all of us, but most of us. Most of us were born in the United States and are granted all of the privileges associated with being a citizen of this country. The challenge then for each of us is how we will use this privilege for good. Those of us that went to the southern border were continually reminded that if we don't allow this trip to change us, if we don't share our stories and experiences, then it will all have been a waste. A waste of time, a waste of resources. If we hear this message and neglect or refuse to bear fruit, then what good is it? At this point, you may be wondering, as a community that is primarily located in upstate New York, how can we possibly make a difference to those trying to enter our country on the southern border? The first way is through education. We can learn about the struggles. We can learn about the new asylum ban that limits the number of asylum seekers that enter our country each day. We can learn about the app that asylum seekers must use in order to legally enter our country to receive asylum. First, the app necessitates that you have a phone to use it. If you do not have a phone, this provides the coyotes and cartels with another means of extortion. The app also requires users to take a photo of themselves. but the photo recognition software often fails to recognize photos of dark-skinned individuals. The window of opportunity for the app operates much like a box office selling Taylor Swift tickets. It opens and closes almost simultaneously. After being flooded with hopeful asylum seekers trying to earn a spot in line, meanwhile, tens of thousands remain in a type of purgatory on the border for days, weeks, months at a time, hoping that tomorrow they might win the proverbial lottery and secure legal entry into the United States. For the border near Tucson, only 40 people are allowed to cross with the app each day. Our first day in Tucson, we helped out at Casa Elitas, a welcome center for those granted asylum. They were preparing to receive 600 people that day. That is more than 500 over the legal limit. The good news is that Border Patrol wasn't simply sending these 500 people back to Mexico. The bad news is that around 90% of these individuals will ultimately be sent back anyway, and they will then be banned from reapplying for asylum for a minimum of 5 years. Beyond educating ourselves on the shortcomings of the new app, we can also learn more about what it takes to be granted asylum. First, you need to have a name, address, and phone number of someone who is already in the United States who will vouch for you and commit to taking care of you while you get adjusted to living in the U.S. Once you can prove that, you will be placed in line to receive a court date where you will have to prove that your decision to leave your country was a matter of life and death. This court date will be anywhere from 3 months to 3 years away. In the meantime, you will be permitted to reside in the United States, but you will have limited access and freedoms, making it difficult to get by. Another thing we can learn about is the history of our wall and border policies, how we have spent hundreds of billions of dollars on a wall over the past few decades, how we began work on the wall in the 90s in preparation for the signing of NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, knowing that it was about to displace and disenfranchise myriad Mexican farmers, and that after that happened, some of them just might want to travel north. How most recently rows and rows of razor wire have been added to the American side of the wall to deter people from climbing over, despite the fact that there are huge gaps in the wall just miles away. How those that have offered aid in the form of providing water, medicine, and directions have been killed, detained, and tried for their humanitarian efforts. And yet none have ever been convicted, as one sign we saw read, "Humanitarian aid is never a crime." But even after all of this education, and there is always so much more to learn, we are still left with the question of what can we do? For our young people, the primary task is to share our stories, to share our truth. Some of us now have firsthand experiences of some of the challenges faced by those who are seeking asylum in our country. And if there are those listening today that are interested in learning more about how you can have similar firsthand experiences, we can connect you with some of our partner agencies, like the United Methodist Immigration Ministry, Justice for Our Neighbors, or the Tucson Samaritans, a group that was founded by a local church after their pastor returned from sabbatical and said, "I don't want to be a pastor anymore. I want to do more radical work with asylum seekers on the border." Rather than lose their pastor, the church said, "We want to do that too." And together they founded and now help run the Tucson Samaritans. You could also look into Casa de la Misericordia y de todas las naciones senegales, the House of Mercy and of All Nations that opened just days before the pandemic shut down any access and entrance through our southern border. This House of Mercy is run by Sister Lika, who has the respect of the people, the government, and the cartels alike. I would love to take my family down there for a week, for my children to play with their children, for all of our lives to be forever impacted and changed. Another way to help is to learn about how you can become a host family or host site for asylum seekers. The House of Mercy had a map with pins in all of the places where their people have been connected in the U.S. As of now, Rochester has no pin. Syracuse is the closest. And perhaps the most obvious way to advocate can also seem the most daunting, to effect policy change. The new app for asylum seekers may look good on paper, but is terrible in practice. One of our main ways to secure our borders and deter illegal crossings is still through fear. We separate families when they cross the border and then return them to Mexico in different locations after taking away their phones so they have no hope of reconnecting. And then there's my primary question after our trip. If asylum seekers have a verified name and address of where they can go to receive temporary aid, why are we wasting resources holding them in inhumane, warehoused conditions on our borders rather than releasing them to their desired locations? None of these questions or challenges have easy answers. But if enough people begin looking into them and pressuring their local and national lawmakers, we might just be able to shift some things for the positive. Over $300 billion has been spent on building and protecting a wall that has failed to deter people from entering our country. Maybe it's time to figure out how we can reallocate funds to live into the words written by Emma Lazarus and emblazoned on the plaque beneath the Statue of Liberty. Not like the brazen giant of Greek fame, with conquering limbs astride from land to land, here at our sea-washed sunset gates shall stand a mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is the imprisoned lightning and her name Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor that twin cities frame. Keep, ancient lands, your storied pomp, cries she with silent lips. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. The wretched refuse of your teeming shore, send these, the homeless, the tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. We have a long way to go to live into these words. But each journey must begin somewhere. First, we must be willing to listen to the parables around us, to the stories of inequity that surround us, so that we might comprehend, be convicted, and work to bear fruit that welcomes and is available to all. Both the parable of the sower and the parable of the asylum seekers should call us to action to be a better neighbor. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, the tempest-tossed, to me. May we hear these words, and upon hearing, may we shift our lives to bear fruits of compassion and justice for all, especially those who are marginalized. For truly, I tell you, whatever you did for the least of these, you did for good and for God. May it be so. Amen.
Thank you for listening to the Asbury First Weekly Sermon. If you enjoyed this message, please visit asburyfirst.org and learn more about our mission to love God and neighbor, to live fully, to serve all, and then repeat.